This is Richie Wexler. Welcome to Vintage Annals Archive Outsider Podcast. I'm really excited about today's guest, Isis Aquarian, episode 63. If you know anything about Isis, you would probably know them through the Source family work they've done. They were the archivists of that community, matriarch, so many other things. One of my favorite items is a book called Source Family Album that she made with Jody Willey, who also directed the documentary. They worked together for years. And in that book, they decided to put the introduction at the end. And I'm going to kind of keep that format. So it's designed to kind of let the listener explore the episode and not give too much away. And I think that's an amazing way they started their book. But I do want to say how impressed I am at having gotten to know Isis. They've been super kind to me, super supportive. I think they're one of our greatest thinkers of this last, 80 years. And one of the strongest women I've ever learned about. And I'm very proud that I know this person and I can call them a friend. But I will read a bio about them. Author Isis Aquarian, Charlene Peters, was the Source family's designated documentarian. As one of Father Yod's 14 wives, she photographed and filmed Father and the Source family, recorded audio, maintained scrapbooks, and helped manage the family business. Since the release of the Source family documentary and her award-winning memoir, The Source, The Untold Story of Father Yod, Yahuwah 13, and the Source family, she has produced a record, Isis the Crone, distributed through Drag City, supervised the release of other Source family music through Drag City, created a Source family comic book, and her own t-shirt line. She's written for and appeared in Flaunt magazine. She's a co-founder and the vice president of the Source Foundation and was the associate producer of the Source family documentary. She's spoken at the International Intentional Community Conference Association. Isis currently resides in Kauai, Hawaii, and is 80. She has a daughter, Saturna, and a granddaughter. Isis has some really exciting ongoing projects that they're working on. There's a TV series in the works about the Source family, a documentary about Isis and her life, and they are reprinting and publishing the first two books on Father Yod. And one is The Legend of Father and the Source Family, and one is The Source, The Untold Story of Father Yod, Yahuwah 13, and the Source family. And please keep an eye out for those. Everything I've ever seen Isis make or work on, whether it's a documentary or a book, is insanely well done. And that's partly due to her connection, mainly her connection with Jody Willey. I mean, the two of them are amazing in their own right and together. Thank you. Curious on your relationship with the idea of being a grandmother, whether that's direct family or and Source family, because I feel like you were a mother of a lot of people, so I don't want to limit this discussion to just your immediate biological family.
Father Yod used to tell us that we basically lost our gregarian instincts tribally when we lost the tribal way of life and instincts. It broke down a lot of the arcs in a timeline. There's, the elders, the grandmas, the grandpas would be the elders. And it was usually the elder crone or the elder matriarch at that point that basically was the power behind the throne. And she was also the one that would orally pass down the teachings. That basically runs through my thread, with archiving, having the teachings, passing down the information and the teachings to preserve the legacy. And I'm also an elder. Here in Hawaii, we call them kapunas. And the kapunas, the elders in Hawaii, are very well respected. They're taken care of. And I'm also a grandmother with my granddaughter. Yeah, my daughter was the last baby born in the Source family before it dispersed.
There's a video I found online about with the birth rope. I'd love you, if you don't mind sharing the birth rope and, you know, the connection with blood and just kind of what that's meant for you.
I have the birth rope. There are 52 names on it, 50, because there was 52 births. And the first birth in the family, we put up the birth rope, and it had 3 or 4 knots in it so that you could hang on to it and pull in, you know, different ways that you wanted. We became very tribal right from the beginning in the Source family. You know, Father Yod, just like we went heavy into all past lifetimes, incarnations. And we were like a living theater. We really got into it. The birth rope's very sacred. Each birth, we put a bit of the birth robe on the name tag. So that DNA is there. And it's a frequency. You know, it was just something that was sacred to us. Home births back then were illegal. Think of it now, it's like, what? You could not have a baby at home. Home births were illegal. We were doing home births. We were doing homeschooling. You know, so much of what we were doing was like, you know, not man's law. Father very early established that we were living by spiritual law over man's law. And that's what most people do when they go off the grid. That's what was happening in that time frame, the 60s and 70s. We weren't the only ones, yeah.
If you remember, in terms of back then, was it, you know, logically, it's got to feel weird to be told what you can and can't do and be judged and be, I'm sure you, I mean, I know there was something in the documentary about them coming, you know, like you guys had some legal issues. I mean, was it weird to just have interlopers try to stop the way of living when it was just a natural thing for you? Was that?
No, it wasn't, because we had the protection of the whole. We were our own entity. And Father Yod was like 6'4", 6'5".
Right.
You know, he was an ex-Marine Raider. He had our back, and he knew he would take care of shit if shit came down. Let me put it that way. No, we were in our own little bubble, and it didn't bother us. That whole time frame with the hippies and the flower children, it was a crossover, and it was a whole new thing that was happening. It was a whole generation that had the same mindset. We did not feel alone, especially in LA. It was a very open situation. And Jim Baker was very famous to begin with before he was Father Yod. So he was extremely well known in Hollywood. We were actually called the darlings of Hollywood at one point. And we never really interacted too much, except when we were at the Source. But that was a protected space also.
You had said something about like communal living at that time and how like you might not choose to live in the same house. It seemed like you talk about like living community, but not necessarily in the same exact space. And I just thought that was such a, you know, with communal living. And I'd love that you were open to share that. Are you comfortable talking about that at all?
Sure. You can ask me anything. It was kind of a time out of time. And what we did together, it was a magical force that brought us together. 150 people were brought together to live together. Most of us would not have probably picked or chose that group of people normally on our own. We were kind of thrown together because of Father. You know, it was kind of like his show. It was his journey. We were part of it. While we were together, it worked. We had a lot of fun. We were learning, you know, spiritually. We were in our evolutionary process of morphing to our next evolutionary process, which is a spiritual being. So we all lived pretty much in our godhood. Awesome. It was amazing. It was held together by the glue of Father. When Father left, that kind of broke the bonds. And we dispersed within 2 years because it wasn't us as a whole that was keeping it together. It was that experience that we had, and then he was gone, and it was kind of over. And he told us this from the beginning. He said, You know, there would become a time when you're going to have to. He tried to disperse the family three times. He said, I gave you everything I know. It's really time for you now to go out and do your journey. This was mine. He made that very clear. But we wouldn't leave. So he finally had to leave. So in the now, that's why we say it works. There's many good things about communal living. For us, most of us would want to do it in a different way. Have our own space. Everybody be responsible for their family and themselves, but maybe, you know, share, maybe be a more communal village, a more communal bond somewhere, like off the grid or something.
If you're looking at what's going on today in the world, and you look at kind of what was going on then, like I know in the book you and Jody did in the Source Family album, there's somewhere in there it talks about how right now we're in the same kind of conditions we were in when that kind of, when you all kind of started living differently. And I'm just wondering, tied to what we just talked about, what advice do you have for people that are thinking about communal living?
Joni and I have been working together, I would say, about 18, 20 years.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, you're both to me very amazing. And I love that you're, I can tell, I just from getting to know you a little bit and her, like, I it's very clear that you have a loving and understand each other deeply. She's a special person. She's a very special person.
Legacy saver, you know? Yeah. Well, so am I, but.
So are you, like, right.
She makes legends out of people, you know? It's like she's like, they say the woman is a kingmaker. There's God makers, you know, there's the power behind the throne. Or she was like the power behind this whole source and me in getting done what's been done.
In what ways did she work or who she was that allowed that?
She does things that only Jody can do. And that's all I can, how I can explain it.
That's fine. I get that.
She moves through the universe at her own pace, in her own way. She has her own power. She does it in kindness. She's been in LA in the business long enough that people trust her. They know her. She's just awesome. You know, she's put up with me. I'm not, apparently, I have a reputation for not being known to be all that simple to be with. Yeah, she's been able to hold her ground with me and move with me and, you know, and stay in kindness and commitment.
And keep in mind, like when I interviewed Jody, I mean, I spent 16 hours preparing for Jody. And a lot of that was Source Family and the book and the documentary and articles. Some of that was also Unarius, which to me is, I don't know how much you're following what's going on or how much you know about through Jody about that. But there are some interesting commonalities between the two groups.
When she first mentioned the Unariuses, you know, years and years ago, I didn't get it. I thought it was kind of kooky, but I knew Jody, and she has an innate ability to tune into things before they happen, you know, so I knew that this was going to happen, and I knew it would be just as big as us, because I know Jody does not commit herself to something unless she's, like, she's guided herself, and she trusts that. I think the Unarius, I think they're awesome. I think it's timely, you know, Space Brothers. So very, very timely. And that's the thing with Jody. She's very timely. And I know I totally support her thing with them and follow them. And I think they're a great bunch of people. You know, they're real. And they have their own basic wisdom teachings.
Is there a particular, I don't know, moment or story in working with Jody for so long that you're comfortable sharing?
There's so many. Oh my God. When we first started out, like I'm 82 now. So I don't know, what was I? 60s, late 60s, whatever. I was older. Since I was the first one out of the gate with the Source Family, you know, with doing the book and, you know, bringing everybody out of the Source Closet, it was daunting. I got a lot of, yeah, I had to go through a lot with that. Anybody that's first out of the gate gets it, you know, because nobody was ready for the Source Family to be announced that they were even part of it. Their families didn't even know. Their kids didn't even know. And a cult culture, a commune, doesn't have the positive spin now, 20 years later, as it did back then. Young little great Jody, all full of pep and energy and you know, ready to take on the world. And she starts dragging me around Berkeley in San Francisco, taking me places to LA with all these young hipsters and the undercurrents and the undergrounds of what's happening. And I'm just like, it was hysterical. Like we'd get in the car and go and hit these places and be on a radio show or talk or do show the book or something. And it was just like, we were kind of so mismatched, but it worked. And during the times that we would travel or drive for 8 hours to go on a road trip somewhere, we had time to talk and really get to know each other, figure out how we were going to deal with each other, because there were issues came up. I had my personality and she had hers. And she's pretty bending, but she's very stubborn too. She only will go to a certain point and she will not deviate the way she sees a mission. So, you know, our backstory, I think, is worth even a story within itself, how that worked out. There were times it got hot and heavy with us, but we knew that the love was there and we knew the commitment was there. And somehow it just worked. But when she was married to Adam, you know, I mean, he just like basically didn't want too much to do with it. And so she moved me into their house to finish working on the book. And it's like, oh my God, you know. But then I got to know Adam, and Adam and I were like two peas in a pod when they were living in LA together, and Bud Cort was living on the same property with them. He was like a little cottage. We were working on the book and I was at their house, and Adam and I started talking, and he says, well, have you ever been to In-N-Out Burger? And, you know, by this time I was, you know, vegetarian, and somehow he talked me into it, you know, and he says, come on, I'll take you. So we jump in the car and we go to In-N-Out Burger and we get back, and Jody's waiting there like the mom, like, I don't believe what you just did. And she put us both in a corner, Rich. And the thing is, we both went to our corner.
Oh, my God. Like,
yeah, we got quite angry there for a while.
I'm curious on it. I don't totally understand. I know you had a big role in the film, but it seemed like you have more of a role in the book. Do you feel like you had more of a role in the book being made than the film?
Yeah. But the book, it was from my point of view, which I think is all anybody can do. There was
You're talking about the first book. I want to talk about the first book and then the family album. So let's talk about, we can use this. I just want to make people know that if they're listening, there's two books.
There's the book and then there's the scrapbook.
Yeah, I'd rather, if it's okay with you, I'm happy for you to talk to either, but because the scrapbook is newer, I'd rather, you know, focus on that. And it seemed like that was...
The scrapbook was purely my archives, the way I had them in the family. And what I did was, because we didn't have computers back then and stuff, like I got tired of trying to find negatives and look at them or have proof sheets somewhere. And I always wanted to go back and look at things. Her father would ask me something, I'd have to try to find a photo for him. Every shoot or every picture, I would just cut up little parts of proof sheets or leftover prints or whatever I wanted with flyers or whatever, and started keeping scrapbooks.
I love this. This is one of my favorite objects. I love this book. I love the format. I love that it is in the format of a, you know, that it has like edges and it looks like a scrapbook, and it seems like it makes it so authentic because it's just pages from the book, correct?
Yeah, it's just the way I put it. That's exactly, they took my scrapbook and copied it exactly, and then we put, you know, explanations of the pages in the back. It was a visual transference to the reader.
I it was interesting when we talked. I asked her. I'm like, it seemed a little odd to me that the introduction's in the back of the book, and she explained why. Were you part of that decision as well?
Of course, it was my book. Jody, Charlie, and I were partners on this book.
So tell me about that, because I think it's such a smart way to do it. Because it seems like what you just said. It's like you wanted people to, at least from her and from what I'm hearing from you, that to take it from the visual is more important.
Right.
And I think with her, even with like you both making this documentary and how she makes work, she's making this stuff to get people the opportunity to think for themselves, not just, she's not naming everything. She's not pointing and this is this, this, and this. And I think it just makes it alive.
That was exactly the purpose of doing it that way. And her and Charlie were they're very similar.
Who is Charlie? I don't know who Charlie is.
Charlie, on one of my visits to LA when I was something with Jody, I got this message or somebody called me and said that they were from this gallery in LA and they were very interested in my story and my archives and that the gallery owner, you know, was kind of smitten with the whole thing, which was Charlie, but it was his partner that called me and said, would you like to come by sometime? Now, the thing with me is I get downloads, I call them, and it was immediate download that when I get them, I don't question them. It said, okay, this is supposed to be in its time, it's now, go. So I don't question those because I know that's Father Yod. You know, he's always been with me and had my back. So I said, of course. I said, I'm getting in the car now and coming. And the guy said, kind of stuttered, went, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I said, no, I'm coming. What's your address? You know? So I drive there and I get out and I walk in. I just said, we are going to be great friends and we're going to be working together. And just totally took him by surprise. He didn't know what had happened. And that's the way it was. He actually helped save my archives. I live in Hawaii and I a massive, massive archive. And so I had boxes, since the family dispersed, and they were getting ruined here because of the humidity, and I had to do something with them. Charlie and I talked about him coming and staying with me for a couple weeks with a scanner and scanning what I have and getting it into an archive program, which ended up at UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, wow. All that stuff is it being physically held there or just the digital archive?
Everything. They have my archives. Basically, the best thing that ever happened because that literally is what is going to save the legacy. It's going to be there hundreds of years after all of us are gone for, you know, the press, the public, students. You know, I know that I'm going to end up reincarnating, probably, as much as I don't want to, but probably. And finding this material and looking at it and going, my God, this like, what a beautiful bunch of people. What a great story. I'm going to be looking at myself and I might know it and I might not. But the thing is, you know, I do that now. You find stuff in the 1800s and it's so familiar. People look so familiar. You know? But the thing about Charlie is he came, I consider him and Jody part of saving this legacy for Father Yod, which was my commitment to him. I knew him as Jim Baker. I was very happy with my life. I was with a famous photographer. We were working with the bands, rock and roll. We needed somebody to look like Jesus. I hadn't seen Jim in a while. He'd had the old world and his wife, Dora, which was a friend of mine. And then they opened up the source together. But I heard that he'd opened up this source. He had people running around looking like Jesus. So I went down to see him, and I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. And I walked up on the patio, and he came out looking like Moses. I just became uncoated or something. It was just like, I went, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. I didn't connect with him as Jim Baker. It wasn't our time. But this was our time, and we looked at each other. And he says, we have done this work many lifetimes together. And that was it. I never went back. I literally never went back.
I'm curious in the relationship between him post his, it's hard for me to talk about this because I know like ideas like death don't always play out, but I'm, you know, after his body was gone, I'm curious on your relationship with him from then to now, if you're comfortable sharing. And I'm hoping I put that in a way that makes sense. I don't.
Many people have their own story like that, how they were drawn to him or the family. I mean, we all have that story. All the threads are individual, but we're all connected to him. So I had an agreement with him before incarnation, before incarnating, and that's with the point it became clear. I wouldn't have necessarily have ever left the life I had or picked the people that were in the Source family to be my family. We were such a mixed match of people thrown together. We weren't necessarily there for each other. We were there for him. During the family time, while the family was held together by the glue of him, it was great. You know, we had great fun with each other. We all had our own issues or whatever, or not. We all have our own story within that. But when he left, it kind of started to unravel. And that's when we all dispersed. And then we started our own journey, what to do about each other, what not to do. Most people just left, went their own way. And, you know, 20, 25 years later, whatever, we started having maybe some reunions to come back together. Some of it didn't go so well. I mean, you know, there was issues that were never worked out or talked about. And you stuff them and hold on to them. Well, when you meet, like, you know, 30 years later, it all comes out. So it's very interesting. The family now, we all have our friends from the family time that we bonded with. We've agreed to just agree in kindness that we had a journey together and we loved Father and let it be, you know, at this point in our lives. The thing is, because the source energy never left me, the frequency, because I had the archives surrounded me, which had an imprint on it, its own frequency. So it was an alive energy, a connection to the source that never got cut or died. And I still had a commitment to him because the archives hadn't been saved. I hadn't saved the legacy, you know. So he stayed with me. You know, we mind speak, and I stayed his wife. He said, as long as you stay within the family, it counts. But he said, once you go outside the family or you leave me, then you're like, you know, no longer in the family, or if you are his wife, then you're not my wife. Well, after he left, most of the council women did have a son they went to or were with. And so that's how I had my daughter. I was with one son in the family. We had my daughter, and that's when the family dispersed. And then, you know, we dispersed, we left each other. And then I raised her on my own and just stayed true to Yahweh, because I was still working my commitment with him. And I don't know how it worked. I had no issues with it. It was a very organic, natural flow. It wasn't something that was hard for me to do. And there was just nobody else that measured up to stepping into his place. So they just, you know, it didn't happen.
If you're okay talking about, I'm curious to hear about your relationship with your daughter, what she's like, you know, what was it like? I mean, tell me, you know, just.
She's awesome. I mean, I'm just so happy that I have a daughter and a granddaughter who's 15. It's a great pleasure, and it's a privilege for sure. She calls people in the family auntie, uncles, you know. She knows the story in and out, but she says, Mom, this isn't my story. She says, I will give it to you. I will allow you to have this whole thing that you're doing, but it's not mine. Well, we had that agreement. Growing up, I always kept a picture of, you know, Father Yod, and that really didn't go over too well with her and her friends. You know, I was the kooky mom that, you know, she was embarrassed about. She knows the kids of the family. You know, at reunions, they would just have the best time talking about their moms and dads and laughing at us. But the kids get along great. The kids, yeah, from the Source family. Well, they have a bond.
What's your connection with your granddaughter, if you're okay talking about that?
It's good. I'm involved in all of her activities, her sports, and stuff. I go with her. But, you know, she, from 13 to, I think, recently, she had a rough patch through puberty. And I had to just step back because it was gnarly. Everything they say about puberty can be true. You know, geez, oh my God. Coming out of it now. We have a little hui ohana that we have going on between her mom, her and me, and then my in-law, her other grandmother.
And you're all in Hawaii together, right?
Yeah. And we get together like once every weekend and we do dinner together and we play games. And that keeps us together and bonded. We catch up with each other. Yeah. And she actually lives right on top of my house in a separate unit. So we're on the same property together.
I just want to know, in terms of Bud Cort, did you ever get to know Bud? Was he involved with the Source family or was he just kind of hanging out?
He was involved with the Source family in the early, early, early days. And it was almost like when I came into the family, it was like he was kind of out because, you know, he was doing movies and stuff. He was gone a lot, kind of freaked out that I was from the Source family. Like he didn't want anybody to know about he was in the Source family and kind of freaked out about it. So that was funny. So I used to kind of taunt him, but whatever. You had asked me about Rick Rubin. Rick looks exactly like a young Jim Baker, Father Yodi. You know, so we kind of laugh about that with each other. But I did a 2-hour shooting with Rick recently, and then we're going to be doing more. I don't know exactly what our project is. When you work with Rick, it's like he's like the wind. When he's here, he's here. And when he's gone, he's gone. And he has his own way of doing things, you know, and it's very organic.
How did you meet Rick? And when you met him, was there that same download of understanding that you just talked about before?
It took me a while to get connected with Rick. He knew of us, and I knew of him, and I knew that something was going to happen. And we finally, just this year, we did a big thing in Malibu with a dinner on top of a mountain. It was an event. And through Atlas Obscura and doing the book, the family book. And Rick was invited and he came with his wife, actually. Now Rick's not known for doing anything like this. And when he doesn't stay long. You know, like he's in and he's out. Well, we came, I grabbed a hold of him for the whole night. We totally bonded and connected and love his wife. Just adore Rick. I'm so in love with him. He's just awesome. And then he said, well, I'm surprised I'm here in LA to even be here at this time. So he said, let's take advantage of it and let's meet tomorrow and start the first segment of a shooting.
Are you able to talk about what that is or not so much?
It's up to you. We don't know yet. I mean, it's going to be something, but I don't know what.
Are you able to talk about just you just connecting with him like that? Or I mean, I don't want to push you. I'm just curious on like what you all talked about. What was your interaction?
So the next day we get together and everybody warned me, like, you know, I'll be lucky if I have 20 minutes with him. So he came in and we started shooting. And I'm not kidding. It was 2 hours later. And they said, somebody finally said, Rick, we're out of film. We can't shoot anymore.
Yeah, it just seems like both of you are of this mindset of just like, and Jody's like this, just being able to inherently understand people, situations, to connect, when to back off, when to move forward, and just like, and being on a certain wavelength that is spiritual, that most people, if they were to talk about it, they might get laughed at because most people don't fucking understand any of that.
And Rick right now, he only is doing things that he wants to do. And he's branching out to new venues. And so that's where people like me come in. He respects what Father Yod did and who Jim Baker was and Father Yod. And we have a music band, Yehoah 13, which he likes, you know. And he thinks I'm a blast. You know, when we were at dinner and I leaned over and I said, you know, I was going to follow you to the ends of the earth until you gave in. He says, I know, that's why I'm here. You know,
I feel like your life, I don't know. I love that I get to share this because there's so much strength. There's so much knowledge in who you are, and just letting people, being able to share this with other people to me, is going to teach people how to handle the next 200 years to a certain extent.
Well, the past is the foundation that you spring off of for the future. And you can time travel instantly in your life, you know, your past, present, future. You can go anywhere in those three pockets anytime you want with yourself.
I want to leave you with some extra time, the last maybe 5 minutes if it goes longer, just to share about anything you're excited about happening next, anything you're excited about in your life, whether it's, you know, it doesn't have to be a project, just, you know, what does your life look to you? What are you looking forward to over the next 10, 20 years?
My life right now in my 80s is going very well. You know, so far I have my health. I mean, you know, everything they say about old age, believe me, is true. I can say that. You know? But I seem to be doing fine. No, I live in Hawaii. Yay. I have a beautiful home, piece of land that's paid off, you know, exactly, to my sister, who I call Saint Bobby. You know, when she left the body, I inherited the house that is here now. So I've been very lucky that way. And I told you about the projects we're working on and everything I've done. I've done, you know, over the years, we've done 2 books. We've done a comic book. I've taped his morning classes. And Carl Anderson has reproduced them, and they're on MP files. You can listen to the real deal in the real time. So we have done a lot, and a lot has happened, and a lot's still going to happen. And I don't even have to worry about it. It just comes in its timing. And that's where I'm at right now. I just kind of wait for its timing and see what presents itself. And something always does.
Got to be exciting to, you know, be in the, I don't know, you know, I don't know how you look at it, because I feel like you talk about past lives and future lives, but being where you're at, it's got to be nice to be having some exciting things happening that you might not have expected.
Well, exactly. And my whole life's been like that, Rich. I was always with the in crowd. My dad was chief of documentations for the Air Force. So, boy, you know, there was a lot that was always happening. I worked under President Johnson when I got out of
school. Oh, holy shit. Were you photography based?
I was a White House aide. I've always been in with society, with the elite. And I left there, went to New York, and then got in with, you know, ending up in an elevator with Salvador Dali, going to Andy Warhol's something. And they're all like brief encounters, nothing that anchors me. It just took my life, it took me on a path where I've been able to have everything, experience everything, and yet it doesn't let me anchor. It keeps moving me on until I found Father Yod. And I met him before he even started The Source, but we never connected. I was friends with his wife, Dora.
I just also love, I love that your belief in faith, because I feel like a lot of people, it's hard to come by these days, but your life seems to be a lot about you believing and having faith and therefore finding all these things that you were meant to do, even if they're not the best. I talk about, like, it's very clear to me that whatever you're putting out energy wise, that it's being answered because of whatever that is in you, in magic in you, whatever you want to call it. And it's beautiful to be able to talk to you.
Also very important. Father Yod told us, he said, just get a passing grade, you know. And he says, you're in an evolutionary process. You're morphing into a different frequency. So, you know, life is a school. He said, just get a passing grade. And everybody's got to take their own exams. I remember that my whole life. So when I go through the down stuff that you talk about that comes with the good, I go, aha, I just have to get a passing grade in this. I just need to get through it, but I need to get a passing grade in getting through it. So I never go down that far because I remember that.
And I'm hoping in all these stories that are told of things you've been part of, that at some point, somebody is smart enough to just focus. And it seems like what Rick is doing, focus on just your story. Because I feel like your story, having you be at the center, is one that I haven't heard as much as I would have liked to.
And that's funny you said that, because that's my agreement with him. And then basically, I have talked about that with Rick. I would like just to have my story, me. So that's what we're working on. I have a story to tell. And we're all part of the cultural and historical relevance of the 60s and 70s. We were part of the pioneers. Our genre, our story, because of that, will live on for hundreds of years. It never we're in a renaissance of that time period. It never went away, you know, and never in history has that really happened, where it's just, where the old guard's still standing, but we've merged with the next generation. I can't tell you everywhere I go how many young people come still and are part of wanting to know this story. And we don't really see a difference with each other. We've kind of like all merged, which is very unusual, I think.
It's such a pleasure to hear about your life, and you seem like just a very beautiful human being. And I really thank you so much for sharing this with me. This means a lot to me when people share their life. I really take it to heart. I mean, it's an honor. And when I say it's an honor, it's not just bullshit.
Well, I know, because it's an honor. I feel the same way, that I'm able to even do this, that you're doing it. People now in the Source family are deciding with Amazon, it's so simple to put a book out.
Right.
You know, we have quite a few people now doing their story.
Yeah.
You know, one of them is a sister of mine, Galaxy Dawn, who I think you know, who just released her book, Psychedelic Wild Child. And it's a nice little book. It's a nice little book. I'd like to give that a shout out.
It's nice of you to mention that.
Well, yes, it's another point of view. You know, like I said, we all have our thread and our story, and we're a good sister. She's stuck by me a lot of years.
And I think, just again, getting back to just like your life and Father Yoda, I think like it seemed like kindness was the root of a lot of that community.
Those were the last words to us. We just said, do what you want to do. Just be kind. I wish you were in LA. I keep thinking you're in LA. This is my soul home. LA is my home. This is my soul home. And I feel like I'm a reincarnated Hawaiian. You know, I'm very strong here, and I'm very much into the Hawaiian community.
Where are you in Hawaii, if I can ask?
I'm on the island of Oahu, which has Honolulu, Waikiki, but I'm on the windward side, a little beach community where Father Yod left the body. I stayed in this community where he last lived and left the body. So I just kind of like kept the light on.
That's some serious dedication. Not everybody.
It's been so easy. It wasn't even, I don't know. Sometimes there's going to be a time I'm going to sit down and want to try to figure it out. And then I go, why? Just, it is what it is. We're in an end time, and there's a new beginning happening. That's very obvious. So, well, yay. I'm so glad we connected.
Yes. Thank you. You have a wonderful Saturday.
Looking forward to staying in touch.
Definitely. You are, one last thing I want to say to you is, we didn't get into it, but it's like, you talk about someone saving the archive. I know that you saved the archive once. What, did someone try to burn the archive and didn't you save it? Isn't that a story involved, or am I making that up?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, it was very heroine-like. I wasn't afraid of Father Yod, because I'd known him as Jim Baker. Most people were like very submissive, and he was an awesome, big, huge, powerful being, you know? And the admiration was so heavy, but you don't mess with my archives. I'm on a mission. And he did, because he went through a period where he was like, I don't want to be idolized. Am I getting in a trap? I don't want to have this end up dogma. And so he was trying to sit on himself to make sure he didn't, you know, everything go to his head and he become like some kind of a ruler that wasn't, you know, in charge or something. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like ego. Well, he was trying to make sure his ego wasn't getting out of check. This could end up dogma. Why are we going to save the archives? He said, I don't want to be idolized. And so he knew he wasn't going to get through to me. I was going to keep doing it. And I'm taping his classes, you know, and he's being photographed. I'm following him around wherever he goes. So in the middle of the night, he had a couple of the brothers come in and take everything I did up to that point and shred the tapes so that I couldn't save them, cut up stuff, and then just basically just dump it in a dumpster. I woke up in the morning and literally freaked out. I went to him and I don't even know what I said. I was yelling. And I said, where is the dumpster? I went down to the dumpster, started retrieving stuff that I could, went back, got up the next morning and just started all over again. And he said, okay, you win. I tried. See, that's all he wanted was he needed to clear himself. He tried. But I went, yeah. And then he made an edict to the whole family. Let me do what I want to do. Don't get in my way. She's the legacy. She's a family archivist and historian. That was it.
Was there anything that got destroyed?
Yeah, a lot of stuff got destroyed. Whatever. Enough got saved.
All right. I said, I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Bye.
Have a pleasant Saturday. Let you know about some opportunities that we're working on now. I have an insane amount of gratitude for doing this work. I you know, pretty much for years I had the Instagram. I think we had like 400 followers up until we got very lucky and Amy Sedaris gave us a repost and we got like a few thousand, and then we've just built upon that over, you know, and we've keep growing. We're at around 46,000 followers. I don't really care about the number, but it's nice to have an audience who likes us and supports what we do. That being said, there's a few big projects that are going to be coming out soon. I don't want to talk about them yet. We are about to have our 13th anniversary, basically mid to end February. That will be 13 years of the Instagram, and then, you know, other things that have happened since then. But I can't be more, I don't know. I never dreamed I'd be able to be talking to the quality of people I get to talk to, that I've gotten connected with some of those, and some are friends that are supportive of me, which is also huge when, you know, when people that you're heroes of like what you're doing, it's a big, we'll just call it a big head fuck. You know, it's like, what the hell, you know, how does this happen? That's all. So, you know, we're also looking for some major supporters. We really need a lot more money to get this amazing podcast out in the world. Due to Instagram, we are severely limited on who sees information about the podcast episodes. And it really sucks to have an audience that I can't even really use to promote a podcast because of the way Instagram is set up to make you pay for advertising. And I don't have that kind of money. I do boost things here and there, but we're not there yet. So any support, any money, anything you want to be, you know, we're looking for a lot of people to come in. I'm bringing in other co-hosts and other hosts. We're doing a lot. We're making a lot of big moves, and we are probably at the highest level we've been at. And it's really exciting to be doing this. I'm a full-time teacher, so a lot of my energy goes into this. And I'm trying to get to a point where it's a little easier to get it out and I don't have to do as much work because it's not sustainable. I am off for a few months and that's probably when I'll do the bulk of this. But, you know, I don't know. We need support. We need support from people that can get us advertisers, from people that can help social media, people that want to fund some of this work or be part of some of this work. I'm starting to do some managing and producing and advising. I have a very particular skill set in how to negotiate, how to work with an artist's vision and then create something with them and through them. And this is a skill I know I've had for decades and I haven't used it. And it's just great. I don't know. I mean, I'm also on the spectrum. And what I say about that is, you know, I had a job before my current job now, which does benefit me in terms of being on the spectrum. But my last job, it made it really hard. Me being on the spectrum made it so I couldn't really do my job the way it should have been done. And that was more the structure of it, not so much my own work or quality of my work. But when I got into this stuff with the interviewing and podcasts and such, it was the first time that all the things I thought were bad about me and made working tough were now things that made me thrive. And, you know, I want to really encourage anybody who listens to this to invest in yourself. Do, you know, do what you got to do. Get some, you know, whatever you're working on, whatever you want to put out in the world, just do it. I'm a very big believer in DIY and independent. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, wait for some perfect circumstance to do something. And I don't think that exists. I think we have to make our own luck, really, and get our own things out in the world. And for anybody who wants help with that, I am around. I'm taking on about 5 clients now to manage. But I will be offering some coaching and advice for anyone who wants that. And that's probably going to be, in terms of managing, I'm working off a percentage. In terms of that work, I'd probably charge outright. I've just known about, I know how to get things done. I know this world very well. And I'm just trying to make some, you know, make something affordable to help other people. So yeah, check us out. Join our Instagram if you don't, Vintage Daniels Archive. Check out our website, vintagedanielsarchive.com. There's amazing stuff on there. And thank you so much for your continued support. I mean, I know there's a few hundred of you that listen to every single episode. And I got to say, thank you. It really makes a difference. Again, it's, you know, we have a podcast that has the quality of one that's been around for 10 years. But it's less than 2 years. But because of just, you know, the amount of actors that have podcasts taking up all the air, I mean, I don't blame them, but it's just how it works. And how hard it is to even promote about our own podcast on my own, you know, network is really hard. But I can tell you there's nuggets. There's so much knowledge in here. I'm all about trying to honor the people. I give people the final edit in the episodes. I feel like I'm kind of getting to be like Mr. Rogers or Jim Henson in how I like to take care of people. So if there's anything you'd ever want to get involved with us, give me a yell, vintagedanielsarchive@gmail.com, or send me a message through my Instagram. Thank you. See you next week.